It's Saturday, the 19th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Andre Miller. Show brought to you by moneyball.com.au and chriswall0313. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like chriswall0313, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be that sponsor and show your support for the show. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far this season, and a big thanks to Chris Wall, of course. Moneyball, if you live in Australia or New Zealand, they are the best daily fantasy sports option, so make sure you're getting behind them and playing some DFS contests on there. They've been a great supporter of the show throughout the season, so thank you to the guys over at Moneyball. You can watch this show live on YouTube. You can listen to it in podcast form on iTunes, Stitcher, and all those standard podcast areas. But if you are watching live and you want to interact with the show as the show is going ahead, tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can see the Twitter handle on the screen below. Right below my hairy face here on YouTube. We have got a fair bit to talk about. As per usual, there's never a dull moment in the NBA, or so it seems. So
let's get to it.
No problem. On Instagram, we're looking for the daily contest Victor Oladipo combined points, rebounds, and assists. The total was 53. Unsurprisingly, no one got it. Surprisingly, someone actually went above that and guessed 61, and that was fairly optimistic, but you know what? Ended up being not too far from the truth. So we doubled down on the prize for that one for tomorrow. On Facebook, we're looking at Trevor Reza, how many combined points, rebounds, and steals Trev would have. The total was 18. We had one person get that correct, and that was, I'm going to butcher this name, so I apologize, Ramon Zalcitasario. So congratulations, Ramon. Well done. You guessed Trevor Reza correctly. On Saturday, we're looking on Instagram at Markieff Morris, how many combined points, rebounds, and blocks. So follow along at Instagram at redrock_bball. On Facebook, it is Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
How many combined points, assists, and steals will Jeff have? And you can leave your answer on both of those posts and interact with the Red Rock community. So thank you to everyone who does that. It really is a good way of getting the show out there to more people as well. And it's a little bit of fun each day as well. We had lots happening. Good luck if you guys are heading into the final days of a playoff matchup. I know I am. I've got a final one tomorrow in a semi-final matchup in my home league, the league in which I am attempting to go for a three-peat. I'm 6-3 up. I thought I was 5-4 up. I'm 6-3 up heading into the final day, but I think I'm up by one turnover and 0.02 free throw percentage. So it is definitely up in the air for tomorrow. And the reason that our matchup's ending tomorrow is because we've got a weekly games limit or a bi-weekly games limit, 2-week matchup. Our limit is 76. We both clocked up 75 games today. So it is tomorrow will be the last day. We'll pass that limit. And then on Sunday, it won't count. So that's exactly why it's finishing tomorrow. But it's been an even contest. And hopefully I get over the line. And hopefully all you guys get over the line as well. The monstrous line of the night. I think that my title for today's podcast was probably the biggest stretch one that I've ever had, and most people will have no idea what I'm talking about. If you have any clue what the title is about, please let me know. But what it is, it's a well-known TV commercial for an Australian beer called Victoria Bitter, and the catchphrase in that is for a hard-earned thirst, you need a big cold beer, and the best cold beer is Vic. And Vic is what I call Victor Oladipo, and it is a massive, massive shoehorn to get that into the title. But here we are, and we're talking monstrous line of the night. So obviously it is Victor Oladipo. Big Vic put up some huge numbers against the Cavs, no less. You know, I was pretty big on Victor heading into the season, thought he was going to be a top 20 talent. Skiles completely messed that up with his ineptitude at coaching. Oladipo is on fire at the moment, though. 45 points, he hit 6 triples. He had 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, and went 16 of 22 from the field, so that is a massive bump there, and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. After being benched for that portion of the season to start the season, which was ridiculous in itself, Oladipo's worked his way back up to be almost a top 40 player, but he is a top 25 guy over the last 2 months. He's a top 20 player over the last month. And in the last 2 weeks, Victor Oladipo is the second-ranked player in the NBA. He's averaging in that time 25 points, 2 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 1.5 blocks on 57 and 82. Now, obviously 57% shooting is a little unrealistic, but he's at 49 over the last month. He's at 48 over the last 2 months. He has found his niche. He is playing fantastically. He's playing big minutes, as he should. And that charade of Skiles sitting him to start the season and benching him, it should cost Skiles his job. It probably won't, but it was ridiculous at the time. It is ridiculous looking back on it now, and not just from a fantasy point of view. Oladipo is really turning into a legit two-guard in this league, and he had a massive, massive performance there. And, you know, if you got him in your fantasy league, which I do in a couple, you'd be pretty wrapped with that sort of performance from Vic. And if you stuck with it through the benching at the start of the season, which you really had no choice to do, you felt like it had to turn around, and it was a great buy-low opportunity. And that's something you always look at, is selling a guy at the worst point of his season is never a good idea, because stuff can turn around dramatically, as it has in this case. And you don't want to sell someone when they're at their lowest point of value. That's when you target guys to acquire. But selling someone off when Oladipo was on the bench and playing 27, 28 minutes a night, it was a bad idea. So hopefully none of you guys managed to do that. Let's look at the waiver wire line of the night. And we're going to the Philadelphia 76ers, and we're going to Nick Stauskas, Sauce Castillo, who has been up and down, is that fair to say? 34 minutes for Stauskas, 23 points, 5 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals on 9 of 15 shooting. He's been up and down in his form. He's been up and down in the way he's been handled in the last couple of games by Brett Brown. But that's obviously a really nice line from Stauskas. Now, what do you do with him? He's a top 100 player over the last week, which is not, you know, it's obviously massively small, which is a contradictory term in itself. It's not big, but he's 2 out of his last 3 games, he's looked decent. He's played 30 minutes in one, 13 in the next, and 34 in the next game. He'd scored in double digits in 4 of his last 5 games, apart from that ridiculous game against Washington where he played 13 minutes and scored 4 points. He's getting rebounds, he's getting assists. He's in his last 3 games, again, excluding that Washington game, he's had 6 assists in those 3, sorry, 6 steals in those games. It's a lot of steals. He's had 8 assists over that 3-game period. He's looking a lot better. And with Robert Covington out, there is a role there. But when Covington returns, that will put a little bit of a dampener on what Stauskas is doing. But at least he's showing that he can compete in the league and he can be a decent player. He's a 14-team league guy, I reckon, at the moment. And, you know, I don't hate adding him when the next time the Sixers play as a stream option, but there is a risk. There's an inherent risk because we've seen it already. In that Washington game, it was coming off a big performance and started to look good, and Brown sat him and didn't play him at all. And that is a risk that you're going to have to take with Stauskas. The young gun of the night, the Karl Anthony Towns Memorial young gun of the night, goes to Karl Anthony Towns, who played 40 minutes and went 32 and 11. He had an assist, 2 steals, and a block. His percentages were elite as well. He went 13 of 22 from the field. He was 6 of 7 from the free throw line. He is doing things that we haven't seen many players do. He is a top 10 player over the last 2 months. He is a comfortable top 20 player over the course of the season. Over the last 2 months, he is averaging 22 and 11.5, 1.7 blocks, 0.8 steals, 0.3 triples, 57 and 79. There's not much more you can say about Towns. He will go in the first round next season. Where it is sort of up for debate, but you could make an argument that he goes in that 8 to 12 range. I'd probably more likely lean towards the 9 or 10 area, not to 12, but he could go real high, and he is going to be a fantasy starter, it appears, for a very long time. Fingers crossed that no injuries befall him, because he has got a complete fantasy game, absolutely complete. He can be one of those rare players who is a positive contributor in 9 categories, and that is not easy to do. But that could be him. It might be tough for him to be a positive contributor in turnovers, considering he's already averaging 2.2. But he might be. He might have that ability to be a positive 9-cat guy. He's got a huge chance of being a positive 8-cat guy. And there's not many more things I can say about Karl Anthony Towns. At the end of the season, I am going to have a real big rookie review show and go through every rookie that played this season. It might take me 4 hours, but I am going to do that. And there'll be a lot more stats and discussions of career trajectories and stuff like that. But for now, just know that this guy is the best of the best. The dart of the night. Wes Matthews of the Dallas Mavericks. He was poor. I think that's fair to say. He played 32 minutes and had 6 points. He had 4 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal on 2 of 9 shooting. He was 2 of 3 from the line. He left the game after a hard fall later on. It might cost him some time. He says that he's fine, but he's going to be evaluated over the weekend to see whether he is right to play on Sunday. Wes Matthews' season has... he's not worth owning. I'll put it that way. In a 10-team league, you shouldn't be owning Wes Matthews. He's owned in 71% of leagues. In a 12-team league, he is real borderline. He is only averaging, and the real strength of his game is three-pointers. In the last 2 months, it's only at 1.7, which is not good enough. When every other category, aside from free throw percentage, is a negative, his free throw percentage is high, but it's on 1.7 attempts. It's not enough to have any sort of impact. He's a low turnover guy as well. But you know what? You can get low turnovers by playing someone who doesn't play. So I don't really factor that in as being, oh, I've got to own Wes Matthews because he gets you 0.8 turnovers when he's giving you nothing else positively. The big thing about this is Wes Matthews broke all sorts of predictions and timetables about returning from Achilles surgery, and he played, and that was fantastic. I thought it was great. It took him a little bit of time to get his minutes up, but for the season, he's averaging 33 a game. He's averaging 33.1 a game. Last season, he averaged 33.7 a game. So the minutes are not all that different, but the production is massively different. And the reason is, the majority reason is, you tear your Achilles tendon, you don't come back from it. You don't come back the same player. There is very little chance that you come back the same player. It has happened rarely, and you do not put any stock into it. And that's why when we talk Brandon Jennings at the start of the season, and Brandon Jennings post-trade deadline, and Wes Matthews at the start of the season, I was not big on drafting him at all because of this injury. You don't come back from it. You don't come back the same guy. When you're 30 years old, as Wes Matthews is he? He's 29. When you're 29 years old, you don't come back from Achilles injuries. He is getting paid $16 million a year. It is hurting the Mavericks terribly. He is not their best player. He is not their second best player. He's not their third best player. Is he maybe their fifth best player at the moment? He is really struggling, and you feel that he's not going to get better. That's the concern I have, because even if he does recover from the Achilles, he gets older, and that negates it. Really worried about Wes Matthews. The same I'm going to say for Jennings. Yeah, I'm really worried about Mario Chalmers for next season. He's probably not going to play much of next season anyway, but if your team is signing Mario Chalmers next season, if they're signing Brandon Jennings next season, hoping for them to be starting point guards and point guard saviors, I think you're going to be really disappointed. Like, really disappointed. It's very hard to recover from. And Chalmers has got a bit of youth on his side. Jennings is a bit younger than Matthews, but you don't come back from this injury. Anderson Varejao, he tore his Achilles. He's finished, obviously. You don't come back from it. And that is a real concern for Dallas with this contract on the books for the next 4 years. Big, big contract, obviously, and the production just not there. He might get better, but he is having his worst season of his career, or in recent times, in the last 5 or 6 seasons. Definitely, I'd say, definitely the worst season in those last few years. So Wes Matthews is your dud of the night. Let's bring up the perfect DFS lineup from Friday's games. At point guard, Pat Beverley, 40 points. He had a career high in assists with 10. It was a big night from Beverley. Little bit of an unpredictable one because his minutes had been a little bit reduced prior to this one, but a nice night. Steph Curry went off against Dallas, 59.8. The game was close, so he played some extra minutes. He was a guy that I looked at as a nice tournament ad yesterday. Obviously, it would have worked in a cash game, but he was the guy to go for. Vic Oladipo, 62.5. When Lord Alfred Payton was out, Oladipo was always a nice option. And Klay Thompson at 52.2. He'd been really disappointing recently, and that's relative to what he normally can do. But those sort of numbers he'd been putting up hadn't been quite up to scratch, but he did it in this one. The small forward position, Hollis Thompson, 29.3. He was always a punt option. But Harry Barnes, is that a slump breaker? You heard me talk about slumps yesterday. No, it's not, because it's one game when he's put together a litany of piss-poor performances. 33 for Harry Barnes is a great outing. He looked decent. He looked better. Does it turn things around? Do you go and add him in 12-team leagues? Do you consistently playing him in DFS now? No, I don't. It's one game. I want to see a little bit more consistency out of him because he's been consistently bad before this. Power forwards with Anthony Davis not playing in the second half, and he was red hot. That means cue up the Ryan Anderson hot streak. 44.9 for Anderson, and Dirk dropped 46.8 on the Warriors. And at center, of course, Karl Anthony Towns with 51.7, and that total would have given you 420.2 points. A decent haul, if I do say so myself. Let's now take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to look at these games in a little bit more detail. All right, guys, we are back. Just bringing up the box scores onto the screen for you guys who are watching along on the video. There we are. All right, the first game of the night, and there were eight games for us to get to, was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Orlando Magic. The Cavs struggled a little early. The Magic gave it to them, and the Cavs have smashed the Magic plenty of times this season, so the Magic were pretty pleased with that sort of performance. Tristan Thompson, 11 and 15 in 28 minutes. He came off the bench, which doesn't make much sense to me considering how bad Mozgov's been, but whatever. Four steals, two blocks, 50% from the field on 3 of 6 shooting. Those defensive numbers are brilliant. Four steals and two blocks, 15 rebounds is pretty much what we expect from him. We don't expect 15, but we expect pretty decent or sizable rebound numbers. But his value here is boosted by those defensive numbers. Now, he's averaging less than a steal and less than a block a game. He's a solid 9 rebounds a game average guy, which is fantastic, and he should be added for that sort of reason alone. If you're in the playoffs, if you need rebounds, hey, I need rebounds, who's the best option? It's going to be Thompson. But don't expect these sort of block and steal numbers. You might get a block a game out of him. You get more likely 0.4, 0.6 steals or something along those lines. So the 4 steals is a real fluke. He doesn't score much. He's a free throw liability. His field goal percentage is generally pretty good. He fits certain situations only, so he's not a must-add. Kyrie played 40 minutes, 26 points, 5 assists, and 2 threes, and Ty Lue has said that he won't be resting any players this weekend, so that's good news if you own any of the Cavs guys. LeBron went 18, 7, and 8 with a steal and a block, and Kevin Love, who was battling an illness, he only played 23 minutes. Still sort of productive, 14 and 6, with 3 triples and 2 assists, but only the 23 minutes there, and that allowed Channing Frye to play 21 minutes, and he hit another 4 three-pointers, and he is doing a great David Lee impression in that shooting completely ridiculous percentages. 21 minutes, 14 points on 5 of 8 shooting. He went 4 of 6 from the free throw line. We know he's a good three-point shooter. Yes, we know that. But the numbers that he is putting up at the moment, you can't expect it to continue. He's shooting 64% from the field in the last 2 weeks, 59% from three. Now, he's not quite Josh Richardson good, but it's still ludicrous. He's hitting 2.7 triples in the last 2 weeks in only 17 minutes a game. That's really valuable. That's top 100, and I think that's surprising. 11 points is top 100 because he's giving you great field goal percentage. He hasn't missed a free throw, and he's giving you 2.7 triples. You need to get three-pointers. Channing Frye is going to be a great option. And if Kevin Love misses any time, if Frye will play 25 minutes, and then he's got a real opportunity to put up any 6 or 7 boards as well along with that. So he's fitting in, and he knows his role, and they're using him in his role, and he's just knocking down threes, and he's doing it with a great regularity. Iman Shumpert had 8 points with a couple of threes in his 22 minutes, and J.R. Smith was also limited in this one. He only played the 24 minutes, getting 8 points. While Tim Mozgov, as the starting center, went 7-4, and Matthew Dellavedova, just the solitary point in his 21 minutes. On the Magic side of things, only 3 players scored in double digits. Vic was obviously one of them. Evan Fournier was the other. He had 18-4-2 with 2 threes and 2 steals in his 36 minutes. Continues to be a massive surprise this season. And Jason Smith was the third of the trio to score in double digits. 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 steals and a block in his 25 minutes, while Dwayne Dedman played 18, going 6-6, replacing Nikola Vucevic. I think we're going to see Vucevic miss a couple more games. The things do not look promising for him. Lord Alfred Payton will likely be back soon, though. Do you add Smith? I think it has to be pretty deep. That's a good line from him, but he'll just as likely score 1 point in the next game. He is a 14-16 team leaguer. Ersan Ilyasova, 7-5 in his 20 minutes. Aaron Gordon really struggling here. 31 minutes for Gordon, 7 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists and a 3. 2 of 8 shooting. I'm not dropping him. I am still holding him. But between getting skiles, between foul trouble, between struggles, he's been a really poor guy to own. And I can understand if you would drop him just to get some games in over the weekend, because what he's been providing has definitely not been undroppable. Mario Hezonja had 3 points in his 16 minutes, and Brandon Jennings, who I alluded to earlier, I spoke about him, when we're talking Wes Matthews to start things off, he played 32 minutes and had 2 points. He did have 7 assists. He did have a steal, but 1 of 8 shooting. He played 32 minutes. I don't imagine him to get 32 minutes much moving forward, but it is Skiles, so he could go from 5 to 35 very easily. But with Lord Alfred Payton likely returning pretty soon, it seems a stretch to have Jennings play 32 minutes moving into the future. We don't know what Skiles is going to do. You know, CJ Watson will play 30 in one game. He played 16 here. Jennings went to 32. Jennings will go back to 20 in the next one. Who knows what's going to happen? Jennings is if Payton's out, you might stream him and give him get for assists because he's averaging over 7 in his last 3. You might stream him in that sort of situation. But adding him and just hoping to hold on and hoping him to take you to the promised land, it's not going to work out all that well, I wouldn't have thought. The Thunder and the Sixers. The Thunder got the victory here relatively comfortably in the end, but it wasn't a smashing. Kev Durant, 26, 13, and 6 with a 3 and a block. And Russ Westbrook, another triple-double, 20, 15, and 10. 2 threes, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. An extraordinarily full line from him. We also had Steve Adams getting into the action here. 12 and 11 in 26 minutes. 3 blocks on 6 of 10 shooting. He has been a really nice punt free throw option for most of the season in 12-10 leagues, probably not 10s. But he is tough to own outside of that. That's a big line, but it's not reproducible enough. Enes Kanter kept it rolling, 23 minutes, 16 and 7, blocked a shot, had a 3, hit 6 of his 10 shots, all 3 of his free throws, just continues to do what he does. He also turned it over 6 times, which is pretty high, but Kanter is putting up just really good numbers and obviously has to be owned. 27 minutes for Randy Foy, doesn't produce in that. A triple one is nice, 9 points and 5 assists. 5 assists is also nice, but we leave him for the deeper formats. Andre Robertson has 0 fantasy appeal, and Nick Collison got the start with Serge Ibaka resting, and he didn't provide a massive amount here, going 6-4 in his 18 minutes. We did see Campaign on the court for 8 minutes, though, so hey, it's definitely a trend that is good in terms of seeing him on the court, but he's still not overtaking Randy Foy, which is really what should be happening. And Dion Waiters had 9 points in his 24 minutes. On to the Sixers, Hollis Thompson played 29 minutes, 16, 4, and 3, 2 threes, 2 steals. A very nice performance from Hollis. He's going to have some value while Robert Covington remains out, but when Bob Cove returns, Thompson goes back to that deeper league format. For now, he's probably not even a 12-team league guy. Isaiah Cannon continues to hit threes. He had 3 more here, 10 points, and added 3 steals with 2 assists. I would much rather be owning Cannon over Thompson, especially if you need threes, because he is just doing it consistently. Nerlens Noel, 12-9, added a steal, had 2 blocks. You don't like his 5 of 15 shooting, but everything else was pretty okay. And Ish Smith, 6-4-7 in 29 minutes. Jeremy Grant, one of his better games from a counting stats point of view anyway, 15-7 with 3 blocks, and that's exactly what you want from him. But you need to be aware of these issues. 4 of 14 from the field. He was 7 of 12 from the free throw line. He will hurt both your percentages, and he will do it relatively consistently. So yes, he's in a good spot with Jahlil Okafor out for the season. He's in a good spot to rack up steals and blocks and get some boards and score and hit some threes, but he is going to kill your percentages. So you need to be aware, can I afford this? Now, Carl Landry is back to a bench role, and obviously he can be dropped if he was added in most formats now. The Celtics are struggling. They've got no Jay Crowder. They've lost 4 in a row. They lost again to the Raptors here. They need to do something because they're going to drop down their seedings and drop down in the playoffs. Not going to drop out of the playoffs most likely, but they are going to drop down, and it is going to affect them. They need to get something sorted out here. They made a change to their starting lineup. They moved Evan Turner in and put Marcus Smart back to the bench. Turner played 31 minutes and went 12-5-2 with 2 steals. He is someone who definitely should be considered to be owned. Isaiah Thomas went 23-3 with a steal and 2 triples. And Avery Bradley had 8-4-2 with 3 steals and a block. Bradley is not must own to me. At this point of the year, not many guys are. He's not one of them. He can be streamed in and out. Jared Sullinger, some foul trouble early. He was struggling a little. 17 minutes, 6-4. Now, I've completely blanked. I think he was dealing with a bit of an injury in this one as well. So that's obviously not good news. But he is a hold to me. But what I did like, and I didn't like necessarily the stats, but I liked what I saw from Kelly Olynyk. He played 30 minutes. He started the second half over Amir Johnson. He went 5-4-3 with a 3-pointer. But the 30 minutes is what really gets to me. Now, I'm not picking him up just yet, but we know that if he gets minutes, he can be a producer of stats. He can be a top 50 sort of upside guy. So another game of him getting 30 minutes is definitely going to pique my interest. And they need something. They need something to happen with Jay Crowder sidelined. And Olynyk might be that guy that helps them. RJ Hunter hit a couple of nice threes, had 8 points in 14 minutes, but just looked lost defensively, and his ball handling skills are really not ideal at the moment. And Terry Rozier showed a bit as well. 7, 3, and 5 in his 10 minutes. The 5 assists is obviously nice, but we're talking deep leagues and dynasty formats. Marcus Smart, 22 minutes, back on the bench, 7 and 4. He's not ownable, really, in 12-team leagues. I reckon you can move on from him in majority of formats. The Raptors, Kyle Lowry, at it again, 32, 4, and 5, 5 triples, 2 steals, and a block. That's 32 points on 14 shots for Lowry. He went 9 of 14 from the field, and it could have been a much better night if he didn't go 9 of 14 from the free throw line also. He could have gone for a huge performance. He has been superb. DeMar DeRozan, 15, 7, and 6. While Luis Scola, just out of his brain, 17 points with 3 triples in 21 minutes. He will do this occasionally, and then he'll go back to doing nothing, so do not bite on that. Jonas Valanciunas was out of this one with a hand issue. Bismack Biyombo started, as per usual, but this is what I was saying the other day, is that the 44 minutes that he played the other night is not what you expect. He started here and played 24 minutes, and that's basically what had happened most games when Valanciunas is out. So, yeah, that's fine. He got you 11 rebounds. He had you 2 blocks, but he scored 4 points. He didn't do much else. He went 1 of 4 from the field. So that ridiculous outburst we saw from Biyombo the other day is clearly the outlier. He won't play 44 minutes very often. He'll struggle to get 30 minutes if Valanciunas is out. And he'll give you some nice rebounds and blocks. But by no means was he a must-own guy based on that performance, because it's just not what they do. And Normie Powell got another start, 10 points with a couple of triples in 22 minutes, while James Johnson sat with a plantar fasciitis. And Terrence Ross, he was okay, 25 minutes, 9 points, a 3 and 2 steals, but realistically he's never going to threaten much for your standard leagues. Jace Thompson played 24 minutes with Valanciunas out. He went 5 and 5, chipped in a block and a steal, and that's awesome for deep leagues. But once Valanciunas comes back, he'll go back to being a healthy scratch. We even saw Bruno Caboclo in this one, who played a minute. Didn't do anything, but he actually played a minute, so that's something. The Sacramento Kings and the Detroit Pistons. Boogie Cousins, 31 and 10, 2 steals and a block. Actually, big percentages for him for a change. 11 of 21 from the field, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. Only the 2 turnovers, one of Boogie's best lines of the season. And Rajon Rondo played through that toe issue, 10, 8, and 13 with 3 steals. We never know when Rondo's going to play. He can be labeled probable for a game, and then he sits, and then he plays when he's questionable. We just never know. And it's going to be a real pain in the ass for the rest of the season, I think, because he's not getting better. Rudy Gay, 19 points with a 3 and a block. Yeah, that's a so-so line from him. And George Karl added again with the silliness in rotation. James Anderson got the start, played 29 minutes and had 10 points with a steal and a block. It's like George Karl sees James Anderson go 7 of 9 in the last game. Oh my God, he shot 7 of 9. He's it. He's our starter. He's a gun. We need to play him. That's not how it works, George. He's not a 7 of 9 shooter. Nobody is. And it's not going to happen all that often. Yes, he was 4 of 8 here and he had 10 points, but Bellinelli played 17 minutes. Seth Curry played 4 minutes. You didn't need to give Caron Butler 18 minutes, I'm guessing. I know Omri Caspi was out. I know Ben McLemore was out. But Bellinelli deserves more than 16 minutes. And Curry deserves more than 4 minutes. Willie Cauley-Stein was also out in this one. He was battling an illness. So obviously, if you added him, you can move on there and hopefully you moved on before the game and got someone else into your lineup. Quincy Acey had 6 points in his 18 minutes, while Kostas Koufos got some extra run, and he went 9 and 5 in 17 minutes. And Koufos is more just a name to watch if Cousins goes down, because then he can be a real producer. On the Pistons, Marcus Morris, 24 points, including 6 triples from 7 attempts. He had 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. He is very much up and down, but that's a very big up from Marcus Morris here. So if he's on your wire, fine. Andre Drummond went 14 and 11. He had 2 steals and 3 blocks on 7 of 9 shooting. Only went to the line once. Did battle some foul trouble, so only played 28 minutes, but still a pretty impressive line from Drummond. While Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's hot streak continued, 23, 6 and 2, 3 triples and 2 steals. And Reggie Jackson's breathing issue was obviously not an issue. 19, 7 and 9. He played 34 minutes. And I put up one of his better lines aside from the 8 of 23 shooting. Toby Harris was solid as well. And really, the starting 5 in Detroit does it all. The bench does not too much. Portland and New Orleans. Dame Lillard, 33, 8 and 6 with 3 triples, a block. Very nice night from him. And CJ McCollum went 33-6 with four triples. And he had a pretty good shooting night as well, going 11 of 23. So the big guys there scored 63 points. Ed Davis chimed in with a big night. 21 minutes for Davis, 10-10 with a steal and two blocks. I really think Ed Davis can play. He can hurt your free throws a lot, but he's just not going to get a consistent enough or big enough role in Portland for you to be a definite must-own 12-team league guy. But he is a nice rebound and block stream guy. With Myers Leonard out, him and Mason Plumlee should see extra run. Now, Plumlee played 30 minutes here, 11-6-4. He is a great source of assists from a center. Not necessarily that you need assists from your center, but getting four a game is pretty handy. And he will get some rebounds. He will score. He will help your field goal percentage. And he's improved his free throw percentage pretty significantly this season as well. So Plumlee's going to be around in your waiver wire. You have to look at him. Al-Farouq Aminu, 7-5, not a must-own player at all. And Alan Crabb had 1 point in his 28 minutes. He started off pretty well this season. I never thought he was really a 12-team league guy, but he's clearly not that guy anymore. Gerald Henderson chimed in with 19 points and 6 rebounds in 28 minutes, but I don't think the 28 minutes is all that sustainable for Gerald. The Pelicans, Drew Holiday, I'm relieved that he played 38 minutes here, unless this is just the Pelicans stuffing things up, but 38 minutes, 30 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 4 triples. A big night from him. And as I mentioned earlier, Anthony Davis only played the 14 minutes due to a knee issue. He had 19 points in that time, which was great. He had no other stats, which was weird. But I'm sure it's going to bring out all the Anthony Davis haters. You are going to be able to get Anthony Davis at a pretty significant discount next season because of the injuries. I went through and looked it up. Anthony Davis, yes, he's missed games. Yep. But over his 4-year career, in the same time frame, he has missed 6 less games than Jimmy Butler. But Butler cops no grief for this. Yeah, for missing games. Now, I know some of it is Davis missing time and missing time during games, which hurts a lot for DFS. But when we're talking seasonal leagues, games played overall and production overall, Davis is missing. I said this, 6 less games than what... Well, so he's missed 6 more games than what Butler has. And that's not a big difference spread across 4 years, extra 1.5 games per year. But from people's reactions to these guys, you'd expect that Davis has missed an extra 10 games per year over Jimmy Butler. Now, it's annoying, but I that I don't take any of this Davis is a pussy bullshit, because he's not. The guy just gets hurt, and that just happens. We don't hear Brad Beal's a pussy. When he gets hurt, he gets injured a lot. So does Butler. So does Davis. They're not pussies. Tony Douglas played 31 minutes, so all that talk of Tim Frazier being the starter yesterday changed pretty quickly, but still, we'll get to Frazier in a sec. He was good. Douglas, 31 minutes, 12.6 assists, 2 steals, and 2 triples. As long as Norris Cole comes out, Douglas is going to have value when Cole returns. We don't know when that will be, but it appears he's going to miss a couple more games. We haven't heard anything concrete on that front yet, though. So Douglas is a 14-team league guy and not a horrible 12-team stream guy. Tim Frazier as well, 13-3-4 in 27 minutes, a great assists guy. Again, the 13 points, I don't expect him to get double-digit scoring all that often, and especially not at 4 of 6 efficiency. But assist-wise, he can be a threat, so he's another guy to keep an eye on. Ryan Anderson, when Davis doesn't play, is always big. 30 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 threes, and a block. That's a full line from him, and he has turned around a season which was floundering earlier on in February. Alonzo G didn't score in 28 minutes, and that is not a surprise. Irma Ashik had 2 points in his 13 minutes. That is not a surprise. And Kendrick Perkins had 0 points in his 18 minutes and got ejected, and that is also not a surprise. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Houston Rockets. Andy Wiggins, 21 points, but importantly, he chimed in with 5 assists and 3 steals, hit a 3, and was super efficient. He has started to really figure things out from a fantasy perspective over the last month or so of the season, and it's looking good for him next year. He still probably will go overdrafted next year. I will be shocked if he doesn't go in the top 50 next season, which might be a little bit high, and you might even see people reaching towards him in the top 30, but he is starting to become a fantasy force after a real struggle in the first 3-4 months of this season. Zach LaVine, 35 minutes, and the scoring was there for him, 15 points, but he did some other things as well. 4 steals, a block, 3 triples, 3 assists. Previously, he'd been scoring big, but doing nothing in the other category, so good to see him getting some of those other numbers happening there too. Rick Rubio, 14-3-6, and Gorgui Dieng went 13-9-5 with 2 steals and a block. A very full line, but his hip is still bothering him. So he is going to check that out. Now, if he misses any time, we're going to see more Shabazz Muhammad and we're going to see more Adrian Payne. And Muhammad is not an appealing fantasy option, neither is Payne. But Muhammad is a good scorer and he can give you high field goal percentage, but he gives you nothing else. So you really have to see that if they say, oh, Muhammad's going to start in place of Jeng, if Jeng is out, you really need to look at it and go, okay, do I need Muhammad's points? Do I need his field goal percentage? Because he's not going to give me anything else. Tyus Jones dished 4 assists in his 16 minutes as well. Just a quick little Tyus pointer. Onto the Rockets, Jim Harden. 29, 5, and 14. 3 threes, 3 steals. This is exactly what we were looking for from Harden. So a big night. And Pat Beverley had a big one as well. 18, 5, and 10. A steal, a block, and 5 triples. He'd been quiet, and his minutes had reflected that as well. He hadn't been getting many minutes. But that is obviously a big performance from Beverley. But when it's a career high in assists, you're obviously not going to expect it all that often. But he is still, for the right team, he is still a 12-team league guy. He's a top 60 guy over the last month. And that is, you know, his high threes, his high steals, his ability to get big rebound numbers as well. He's averaging 5 rebounds a game over the last month. That's where his value lies. He's a very anti-typical point guard. Donatas Motiejunas played 26 minutes. His minutes are like a yo-yo at the moment. It's 5, it's 25. It's hard to predict. I love him when he gets to play. Look, 17 and 9 with a 3, a steal, and 2 blocks is fantastic. He can be a fantasy force, but I place zero trust in him getting 26 to 29 minutes a game, which is what he's going to need to be a 12-team league guy. Now, he is miles better than these other guys. Josh Smith, Terrence Jones, Montrezl Harrell, Michael Beasley, Clint Capella. He's much better than all of them. But the injury is the concern with Motiejunas. Speaking of Beasley, he played 26 minutes and went 17 and 6. He did it on 8 of 14 shooting. What do we do with Beasley? He is clearly ahead of Harrell. He is clearly ahead of Smith. He is clearly ahead of Jones. He is clearly ahead of Capella. He is averaging, since arriving in Houston, 12.5 points, 5 rebounds, a steal, half a block, 0.3 triples on 53% shooting. Now, he shot 43% last season. It feels a little unrealistic, but he's in definitely a different role. He's seemingly a somewhat different player since returning from China. He's ranked 101st in the 7 games that he's played, so that's obviously impressive. Do you add him? I reckon if you're in a 14-team league, you pretty much have to add him. But outside of that, yeah, I can see it. If you want some points, and you, hey, I need someone for my lineup today to give me 15 points, and Beasley's going to be the guy. But he doesn't do enough in the other area. So if the shooting drops at all, he's going to provide nothing. Dwight Howard really stunted offensively recently. 10 and 11 in 29 minutes. He had a steal and a block as well. Can't do anything if you own Dwight. Trevor Reza, 15, 2 and 4. Yeah, solid night, but nothing exciting. And Clint Capella went 8 and 3 in his 14 minutes. The Warriors and the Mavericks. Klay hit 10 triples. He had 39 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. That's a massive bounce back. And Steph, many people saying, oh, it's a quiet game from Steph. Steph. That's better. Quiet game from Steph. But he went 31, 9, and 10 with 6 triples and 2 steals. And that is what his season has become. It's a quiet game, yet he still puts up a line better than everyone in the NBA, bar about 2-3 people. Draymond went 15, 4, and 8 with 2 threes, a steal, and a block. And even Harry Barnes chiming in with 20 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, and 2 triples. So just fantastic fantasy lines from those 4 guys. What happens with these guys against the Spurs is going to be very interesting to see. And it obviously could have a real impact in your fantasy playoffs if Steph sits or if Klay sits. We don't really know what they're going to do. It appears that Andrew Bogut won't play after hurting his toe today. Steve Kerr said that there is basically no chance of him playing, so he won't be in. But those other guys, we have to wait and see. Do you add Harry Barnes after this? As I mentioned earlier, it's one game. It's not a change in fortune necessarily. I won't be rushing to add Harry. Mo Spates, though, is going to be interesting. If Bogut misses time, Spates has been scoring at a Michael Beasley-like rate. 13 points in 17 minutes for Spates here. 5 rebounds, a block, 2 assists, and a triple. If he has to get 25 or 26 minutes with Bogut out, which he might not, he'd be an intriguing add, definitely. So in a 14-team league, I'd be all over Spates, and even a 12-team stream guy, he comes into consideration. Not much else on the Warriors side of things, I don't think. For the Mavericks, Dirk was great. 24, 9, and 4. 3 triples, 3 blocks. Super efficient. Doing it again. And David Lee, what is going on with this guy? 16 of 6 and 16. He went 7 of 8 from the field. He hit both his free throws. He blocked a shot. That's great. He was also a team worst, minus 24. That is who David Lee is. He's horrible defensively. I don't know that he is worth the Mavericks playing. The shooting is out of control. His PER is at 27. It doesn't make any sense what he's doing. But he's doing it. He's scoring at a high rate. He's getting high rebounding. The blocks are still much higher than we anticipate from him. At this point, you have to own him, and you have to see where it takes you. My thoughts are it has to drop off. He can't continue like this because this is not who he is. The minus 24 is who he is, but this is not who he is. It also says a lot about David Lee that when he was playing, when he wasn't getting much run in Boston, he didn't work out at all. But then when he found out there was an opportunity that he might get bought out, then he started working out. I might get bought out, so I need to I need to start working and I need to start losing weight. Man, you're a professional athlete on a team who was a good team, and you did have an opportunity to start the season, but you were terrible. Why were you a fat ass then? Just really weird to me. Chandler Parsons suffered a sore hamstring. Now, we haven't heard that it's a strain, which is good. It was just sore. So he played just 22 minutes, 14 and 3, 3 steals and 2 triples. So nice numbers. Fingers crossed, it's nothing serious for Chandler Parsons, and they were just taking him off as a precaution, but we need to obviously check and wait to see what happens. If Parsons misses, then Ray Felton's going to get extra touches and extra playing time, as he was here. 13, 2, and 6 with 2 blocks for Felton. Eliminate the blocks, but the assist numbers and the touches and the scoring will be up for him. It'll also mean more JJ Barea, who played 28 minutes here. He had 16 points with 7 assists and 2 triples. And I had a question about him. Do I add Barea? I need assists and threes. Well, if you need assists, then fine. But it's going to require a Parsons injury or Parsons missing time for Barea to push into a bigger role. And it's just hard to see him being a must-own player. But the assist numbers are fine. He might get you 4 or 5. And that might be enough to change the tide in your league. Darren Williams went 11, 3, and 7 in his 28 minutes. And Justin Anderson actually played 14 minutes. Now, he'll get some more run with Chandler out as well. He won't do massive amounts with it. He only had 3 rebounds and a block in his 14 minutes, but he will get some extra playing time. The last game of the night, the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Lakers. Tyson Chandler, 12 and 17, 2 steals and 2 blocks. He is not far from being a must-own 12-team league guy. It sounds dumb because he's had a shit season, but he is starting to put it up together now. He's getting rebounds, he's blocking some shots, the field goal percentage is coming back together, and I just wish he wasn't playing so that Len could actually play center, but that's beside the point. Chandler is in consideration. Brandon Knight, 22, 6, and 3, a steal, a block, 3 triples, a big night from him, and Devin Booker went 21, 5, and 7. I was super impressed with Devin Booker's ball handling in this and his ability to run an offense. He still has some dribbling issues and some movement issues, but he looks more comfortable holding the ball and initiating things, which is great sign for his future. That's a big game from him. The percentages is awful. 5 of 18 from the field. 10 of 10 from the line is fantastic. And he's only 1 of 5 from 3. And the threes have definitely not been falling at the level that we expect from him. But he's doing plenty of other things as well. PJ Tucker with another solid game. 13 and 6. A steal and a block with 2 triples. But he's not a guy that I'm rushing to go and add. And Alex Len, 1 of 9. For 2 points, 7 rebounds, and an assist. Now, I think Len playing out of position at power forward and being forced to be a more focal point of the offense is really affecting his field goal percentage, because he is not a bad field goal percentage guy usually, but I think being taken out of his comfort zone and playing away from the paint with Chandler in there a lot of the time is making him take worse and harder shots, and that is really dropping his field goal percentage. If you need that field goal percentage, Len is not a must-own player anymore. He was for a stretch, but I think that you can move on from him if that is what's really hurting you. Now, he only had 2 points, he had 7 rebounds, he didn't have any blocks, he had a real nice stretch, but it's understanding when to sort of, okay, bite it, because he's doing you more harm than good, and I think that time sort of appears to be now. Mirza Teletovic had 5 and 7 in his 20 minutes, he had a triple as well. Yeah, not a bad night. The Lakers, they once got the win. Congratulations. Good on you, Byron. You're a champ. You're a great coach. But Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell had their asses plastered to the bench for the majority of the game, especially down the stretch. And Byron comes out with his standard bullshit of justifying, oh, you know, the bench, they beat the starters in scrimmages every time at practice. Who cares? What does that matter? You want to win games, good on you. I hope that they win games. I hope that they lose their draft pick because this guy is a cock. It doesn't make any sense what he is doing. He is destroying this the potential of this group, and they might still come out of it, but he is destroying great opportunities for these players. The Lakers management is enabling it, so they are to blame as well. He is horrific with his coaching decisions. He is horrific with his rotational decisions. He is horrific with his communication skills. He is horrific. And what do you do with D'Angelo Russell, who in the last couple of games is being really hurt by the return of Lou Williams and the emergence of Marcelo Huertas and the chicanery of Byron Scott? Do you drop him? You might have to. 9-3-4 in 21 minutes. Clarkson went 8-1-2 in 25. Randle went 2-9 in 26. Now, Randle, I'm not a massive fantasy fan of anyway. He's more of a rebounds guy, and that's really about it. But the other two guys, you might have to. And it seems dumb, but this is really, really infuriating with what Scott's doing. You don't need to play Ryan Kelly 21 minutes. You don't need Metawell Peace playing 22 minutes. I can assure you of that. Lou Williams was great. He scored 30 points. He had 4 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block. Yeah, big percentages. Lou Williams, if he's going to continue back into this role, fine. He's a good 12-team ad. He's going to be a great free throw guy, a nice points player, and some nice 3-pointers. But I'm talking about the future of the Lakers here, and he is not going to be part of it. Over the last 3 games, D'Angelo Russell is ranked 229th. He's playing only 23 minutes a game in his last 3 games. That is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. I don't care if they get beaten in practice. I don't care if the bench looks better. Maybe 1 game, it's fine. But 3 games in a row, it's not right. Jordan Clarkson is ranked 185th over the last 2 weeks. He is considered to be droppable. His shot is not falling at all. He's not getting any assists. The steals are still there, but he's not providing enough at the moment. You might need to drop these guys. Randle, I don't think is a must-own guy either. It is just brutally bad. I wish the Lakers won this game. It would have been better for Phoenix. It would have been better for the Sixers. They deserve to lose their draft pick because of the mismanagement of what they're doing with this team, with Byron Scott. And if Russell and Clarkson and Randle, to a lesser degree, develop into good players, it will not be because of the way that Byron Scott coached them. It will not be because of the hard-ass mentality that he had with them. It'll be in spite of that. And it's not even the hard-ass man. He says things that are wrong. He says things that are contradictory. 5 minutes later, he'll say the opposite thing to what he said before. He has no idea what he is doing. And that is, I won't say it's a fact, because I can't prove that as a fact, but it seemed pretty bloody obvious at this point. What a sour way to end the game reviews. But that's where it is. We're at that point. It is time for me to take a break, and then we're going to transition into DFS for Saturday.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see. Just like a moment in the sun. It's formula, rocks on the moon.
for these 9 games for Saturday. The first one of them is Denver versus Charlotte at the Hornets' home court. It's the Hornets favored by 8.5, which is fair enough because they're pretty hard to beat at home. They're pretty hard to beat anywhere at the moment, actually, Charlotte, and they are flying. The total is 217. Let's start by looking at the point guards. Kemba Walker is at 8,600. He's been great. He's been consistently good, but he's not consistently 8,600 good to me. But this is an awesome matchup for him against Denver. So if there's any game where he's going to go for 40-plus, I reckon this is the one. He's averaging 35 across his last 5, 37 across his last 3, which is great. But he needs to be 40. He needs to be 43, 44. This is a matchup where I do think he can get to that. So he's worth a look in a tournament, and hopefully he has a big one and goes for 50 or even 60 as we've seen sometimes this season. But in a cash game, I'll go in different directions. Emmanuel Mudiay is down at 5,800. He's dropped a couple of $100. His production has been a little bit off, but much like Walker, Mudiay is in a good spot in terms of his opposition as well. And the Hornets do allow some big performances from point guards at times. So Mudiay is a really good tournament play as well. But I like DJ Augustine as a cash game and tournament option. He's at 4,600. He's been playing big minutes and producing well. 27 average across his last 5, 27 average across his last 3, just consistently around that 27 mark. And at 4,600, that's really plenty. And it's a really nice, solid cash game, 5X, 5.5, 6X sort of value guy that he can be there. At shooting guard, Courtney Lee is going to play minutes. He's not going to do much with them. Will Barton at 5,300 has clearly not been producing that sort of value. He is a tournament punt only. The projections still like him, but he is in a massive, massive funk, so I won't be using him. Gaz Harris at 5,400. So his salary has eclipsed Will Barton for the first time this season. 5,400 is probably a little bit high for Gaz. Not sure I'm going to use him. Courtney Lee at 38, I won't be using him. Despite the minutes, his production just barely goes over 20 points. Small forward, Nick Batum. I love using Nick Batum, but his salary is a little bit restrictive now. He's at 8,000. It is a nice matchup against the Nuggets, but 8,000, you need 40 points out of Batum, and I'm not all that confident in doing it. But in saying that, he's averaged 40 points across his last 5. It just feels like a bit of a risky play here. I don't completely hate it, but it's a bit risky. Jakar Sampson and Axel Toupin on the other side, we don't need to worry about those guys. Power forwards, Ken Fareed, questionable with his back issue, so that could open it up for Darrell Arthur, who's at 3,700. He stunk in the last game, but he is a tournament option. Marv Williams is at 6,100, and he's been just consistently good. He's averaging 31 across the last 5, 32 across the last 3. You feel pretty confident against a Denver front court who does give up big numbers to power forwards that Marv is going to get 30 points, as dumb as that sounds. And Cody Zeller, battling with a knee problem. We wouldn't be looking at using Cody Zeller anyway because he doesn't produce for DFS, but what he's going to do is he's going to open up some minutes for one of the centers we're about to talk about, and that is Al Jefferson, who's priced at 5,200. He dropped 36 in the last game. If Zeller is out, as I would imagine that he would be, but not confirmed, 5,200 for Jefferson is definitely in play, and I think that he would be a really good option, and it's hard to find a cheap center, but he would be a nice cheap center. Nikola Jokic at 6,200, tournaments only. You cannot rely upon him in cash games with the way that Mike Malone jerks that rotation around. Joffrey Lavernier at 3,800 has played really well lately, averaging 21 across his last 3, and he's tournament worthy in case that Malone goes and sits Jokic and goes, nah, you're not playing today, it's going to be all Lavernier. Yusuf Nurkic is another one of those guys. He's at 3,900, and he's averaging 20.5 points across his last 3 at 3,900, which is pretty decent, but it's tougher to rely upon him given the knee issues and given some of the issues that's been with him and Malone and him not seeing the court at all in plenty of games when he's been healthy. The Knicks and the Wizards, the next game up on the slate. The Wizards are favored by 7.5. The total is 206. Let's look at the point guards. Jose Calderon is at 4,000. He's going to get overworked, but I don't want to use him at 4,000 against John Wall. He will get torched. Johnny Wall, though, at 9,900, I love him here. 50 points, he's coming off 2 straight triple-doubles. He's trying to get the Wizards as far into the mix in the playoffs as much as he can. The matchup is beautiful. You should feel relatively confident about John Wall dropping 50. Ramon Sessions at 3,500. If Allen Anderson and Brad Beal are out, I don't hate using Sessions here. If you're looking for that real cheap option, he can give you a 22, 24, 26-point performance at 3,500, and that's really valuable, but there's not a massive amount of love there. Shooting guards, Aaron Aflalo, 4,900, is coming off the bench. He might still come off the bench behind Sasha Vujicic. We don't want to use him, nor do we want to use Vujicic. 3,800 for Langston Galloway. Yeah, it's an appealing salary. His minutes have been up lately, averaging 28, but he's not really giving us much in the way of points. Brad Beal is at 5,400. That salary is appealing, though. He is considered questionable with his pelvis. 5,400. In his last five games, he's had a 37 and a 36-point performance. And at 5,400, that is significant upside. That's almost 7x upside. So you might throw him into a tournament, but I definitely wouldn't be trusting him in cash. And Garrett Temple at 3,800, he's going to require Beal and Anderson to be out, and even then he'll struggle to break 5x, so probably not for him. And Marcus Thornton would be a guy, if all those players are injured as well, Anderson and Beal are out, you might throw Thornton in, but you most likely wouldn't want to. Otto Porter at 4,800, putting together some pretty consistent numbers at the moment. He's more of a cash game option at the moment with his not really high upside, but just consistent numbers and consistently around that 26-27 mark, which is pretty solid. He's averaging 25 in the last five, 27 in the last three. Some nice numbers. He's matching up against Carmelo Anthony, who's not the greatest defender, so he's not going to have that really going against him. Speaking of Melo, he's at 8,800. There's quite a few high price small forwards on the board, but there's a little bit of something about all of them where I go, maybe not. We'll see later. We talk LeBron, we're going to talk Durant, we're going to talk Paul George, we're going to talk Kawhi Leonard. These are all an elite crop of small forwards, but there's something about all of them where I just go, oh, but what about this? But what about this? I don't mind Melo here because against the Wizards, he feels like he's got the best sort of matchup. I think that 40 points for him should be easily achievable in this matchup. I don't know if his ceiling is as high as those other guys, but I think his floor and the price you pay for him at 8,800 makes him one of the better small forwards on the board. Power forwards.
Percentages.
Kurt Rambis is ruining him. He's ruining his production. He's not ruining his career just yet, but he could be if he continues to coach this team into next season. He is at 5,800, Porzingis. He is not in a good matchup spot here anyway. He's not in a good coaching spot. He's not in a good let's-see-what-minutes-he-can-get spot. He is not someone to use for DFS. Markieff Morris is at 4,800. His last two games look really promising, but then Markieff Morris happened. Do we do anything with it? We probably don't. I think we leave him alone, much like the other power forwards here. Jared Dudley, Nene, Derek Williams, Lou Amundson, J.J. Hickson, Drew Gooden, Kevin Seraphin, a whole bunch of crapness. At center, Rob Lopez, 5,600. He was terrible in the last game against the Warriors, only 6.8 points. He'd been really good before that. At 5,600, the Wizards are quite good at reducing centers, so he's not a guy that's really in play for me. And Marcin Gortat at 61. It needs to be 30, and he's not going to get you 30 points on most nights. He will sometimes, but it's not consistent enough, so he's probably a stay away for me as well. Brooklyn and Detroit is out next. There is no spread released for this game just yet. Not really sure what we're waiting on, but hey, that's what it is, what it is. At point guard, Reg Jackson, 6,600. He dropped 36 today, so that's pretty handy, but hasn't really been in the right spot for me to consider using him in DFS, but against the Nets, that's an appealing matchup. So yeah, he's in play. Don Sloan and Shane Larkin. Don Sloan at 4,400 are thrown into a tournament. Larkin, I forget about. And Spencer Dinwiddie and Steve Blake are not interesting in the slightest. Shooting guards. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is on a real hot streak. His salary hasn't adjusted. He's at 5,300. He's averaging 30 points across his last three, 31 across his last five. He is one of the better mid-range shooting guards to use. Sean Kilpatrick, Markel Brown, Wayne Ellington are all less than 4,000 for the Nets. Kilpatrick and Ellington are both averaging over 20, and you'd have to say that out of those three, Kilpatrick feels the most reliable at the moment. Now, he's not really reliable enough to use in cash games, but in a tournament, is at 3,700. Could he get 25 or 26? I reckon he does have that ability. So he is a punt option in a multi-lineup setup. Jody Meeks might return. He's missed about the last 70 games. We'll see. Small forwards. 5,200 for Marcus Morris. He's not going to repeat the sort of production that he had today where he dropped 32, but this is as good a matchup as you can get for a small forward. He's already averaging 25 across the last five. He can have some stinkers, but I feel okay about using Marcus. Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,200 as well. Red hot. Absolutely red hot. Now, the Pistons have a habit of reducing the production of small forwards, so there is a risk there, but he is averaging 38 across his last three. He dropped 38 in the last one. He doesn't need to get 38. If he gets you 30, you're going to be pretty happy. But the shooting, is the red hot shooting sustainable? I'm going to have to say no, and it makes him risky, and it makes him more of a tournament option. One guy to look at is Sergei Karasev, who had a big game in the last one. He played 32 minutes with Wayne Ellington not playing at all. He had 24 fantasy points. He's at 3,600. They liked what he did. He was handling the ball a lot. He is an interesting name to look at because his ownership will be pretty low, and it might work out. It probably won't, but there's something there in Sergei Karasev. Power forwards. Toby Harris at 6,000. His production has dropped a bit, but this is against the Nets, so 30 points should be on the cards. I like him for a cash game here. Thad Young at 7,700 has been on fire, averaging 43 across his last three. The Pistons have been, all season, they've been a tough matchup for power forwards, so there is a bit of a risk with Thad Young there. You need him to go for 37, 38 points, and that could be a risk. Not sure I'm going to take it here. Anthony Tolliver, Chris McCullough, Tom Robinson, no interest in those guys. At center, we've got Brook Lopez versus Andre Drummond. 7,900 for Drummond. I think he's a fine guy to use here. 40 points should be in play, assuming he stays on the court. And Brook Lopez at 8,000 was terrible against the Bulls, which is a little bit disappointing, but I reckon he is in for a really big showing here as well. So both of these guys, I think, are very, very interesting plays if you're spending up at center. Oklahoma City and Indiana is the next game. The Thunder are favored by 3. The total is 210 points. Let's start with the point guards. Russ Westbrook, 10,600. He's getting those 50-point games back on board now. He dropped 54 today. He's averaging 52 across his last three. At 10,600, it is a little tough against a Pistons team whose defense can be a trouble for some teams, but I don't hate it as much as I have in some other matchups. So, yeah, Westbrook at 10,600 is okay. George Hill at 5,200, not really getting it done. It's a great opportunity for him, though, and he did have 25 in the last game. When you play against Westbrook, things open up and you can score some points. So he is, he moves into it as a potential guy, but I probably wouldn't go that route. Shooting guards. Monte Ellis at 6,600. He's been fine. He's averaging 32 across the last five. I just wouldn't feel comfortable about using him. Rod Stuckey, Deion Waiters, Randy Foy, Andre Robertson, Solomon Hill, Anthony Morrow, and Mighty Joe Young. I'm not sure that any of those guys should be anywhere near your DFS lineups. Small forwards. Kevin Durant, Paul George. These are two of the other big name, high price small forwards on the slate for Saturday. Durant is at 10,400. He's consistently giving you around that 40-point mark. Paul George is a pretty good defender. I feel pretty confident I'm going to get 40 points out of Durant. I also feel pretty confident I'm not going to get 50 out of him, and that's a concern at 10,400. Paul George, on the other hand, at 8,900, he can shit the bed against good players and just put up stinkers. So to me, he is not a consideration for cash games, but at 8,900, sure, he can go for 50 in a tournament, and that is fine, and that would be where I'd consider him, but he's had matchups with good players before, and he has really struggled. So that really takes him out of the cash game realm for me. Kyle Singler, CJ Miles, they're not worth really paying attention to. Power forwards. Serge Ibaka should be back after his rest. He's priced now at 5,300. That is not a high salary, but the Pacers are pretty good against power forwards. I'm not sure I'm going to be wanting to use Serge here. Miles Turner at 48, not getting it done. Won't be using him. Lavoy Allen, Mitch McGarry, and Nick Collison, the other power forwards. And I just worked out who it was. Remember yesterday's podcast? If you were listening, I was talking about players who were on rosters and who hadn't played a minute. And we got to Duye Dukan from the Kings. We got to Josh Huestis for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I said, there's another one. There's a third guy who's on a roster and is not hurt, who has not played. And I just worked it out. I'm looking at my list here. Rakeem Christmas from the Indiana Pacers, best name in the league. He has not played a single minute this season. Oh, unless I'm wrong. No, he hasn't played. He has not played a single minute this season. That was the third guy I was thinking about. So thank you to myself for triggering that off. At center, Yan Mahinmi dealing with that back issue, really concerning. I'm not going to be using him. But at 4,000 for Jordan Hill, he's got the opportunity for big minutes. Even at 4,000, getting 20 points out of Jordan Hill in a reserve role is not crazy. You'd have to wait to see if Mahinmi's ruled out. But if he is, I like Hill a lot. 5,300 for Enes Kanter. He's averaging 30 across his last five. 5,300 means you need 26 out of him. So it's doable. It's also just a little bit risky because in limited minutes, things can go wrong. And that could be the case with Cantor. Steve Adams at 4,300. I'm a bit more happier about him. He's averaging almost 24 across the last five, had 33 today. The Pacers have been allowing centers to have some pretty big numbers. So I don't mind Steve Adams at 4,300. Cleveland and Miami, the next game that is up. Let's bring that one up on my screen. The Cavs are favored by 2.5. The total is 209.5 points. As I said, that's LeBron's old coach. Ty Lue has said that he won't be resting any players, so we're going to have the full complement of Cavs in Miami. At point guard, Goran Dragic, 6,900. Nice matchup for him against Kyrie, but he needs to go for 35, and I'm not really sure that I'm putting my trust in that. Kyrie, on the other hand, at 7,400, not against the Heat. I won't be using him at that sort of salary, whereas Matthew Dellavedova is obviously a non-factor. Shooting guards, Dwayne Wade. I reckon Dwayne Wade's in for a pretty big game. His price has dropped to 7,200. His ownership won't be high. I reckon he is a great tournament player. I think that he will want to have a big game against LeBron. So I would look for Dwayne Wade to go big here. J.R. Smith at 4,500. He's strictly a tournament guy. Iman Shumpert is neither. And Joshy Richardson is now at 4,300. He's been putting up consistent numbers. He's averaging 26 across his last five. He's got a high score of 34 across his last five. He's at 4,300. He is in the mix for me in tournaments, absolutely. I'm not sure that I put much trust in cash because his value, a lot of it is coming from his ridiculous, unsustainable shooting levels. But in a cash game, maybe it continues. Not in a tournament, maybe it continues and maybe he gets hot again. Small forwards, LeBron, less than 10,000. It goes one or two ways for LeBron. I feel it won't be an average game. It's either going to be a massive game or it's going to be a terrible game. 9,800 for LeBron, and that's where I say, you know, we're talking about those high-priced guys at small forward, that I don't want to use LeBron in the cash game because he might shit the bed against Miami. And it's happened before in those games where there's a little bit of at stake for him and there's a little bit of nervousness in the regular season. That does happen to LeBron at times. But he also could come out and go for 30, 10, and 12 and put up a huge number. He's at less than 10,000, but his highest score in his last five is only 42. It's not high. So he's probably a stay away from me. Justice Winslow's at 4,300. Yeah, he's a pretty good defender, so that's another factor against LeBron. Not that Winslow can really stop LeBron, but maybe he slows him down enough. 4,300 for Justice Winslow, probably don't want to use him. And Joe Johnson, as good as he's been and as much of a must-own as he is in standard leagues, 5,400 salary is too high. It just doesn't feel like it's the right price for me. Power forwards, Kevin Love. 7,000 for Love, it feels way too high. Tristan Thompson at 4,500. He obviously had a big game today, but hadn't quite been living up to that price over his couple before that. But he is in play. He's worth considering in a tournament. Amari Stoudemire, no. Luol Deng is at 6,500. He's now a power forward eligible player. This is not an ideal matchup for him. But at 6,500, I think you can use Luol Deng. He's averaging 36 across his last five. I don't imagine the Heat are going to slow him down tremendously. I reckon he is in play for 30-plus here. Channing Frye, if Kevin Love was to miss, you'd look at him at 3,800, but aside from that, you probably won't take that risk. At center, Hassan Whiteside's production has been down. He's only averaging 29 across the last three. It's a horrible matchup in terms of ease. He's probably a stay away for me. But at 8,200 in a tournament, we know he can go for massive, massive numbers, but definitely no cash game trust there. The next one is Houston and Atlanta. The Hawks are favored by 7. The total is 213 points here. Point guards. It's a horrible matchup going up against Pat Beverly. So Jeff Teague at 6,500, it's too high. Dennis Schroeder at 45, he's a tournament option, and that is literally it. And Pat Beverly on the other side at 4,900, a huge game today. 40 points. He's averaging 29 across his last three thanks to that game. But that is not a realistic representation of who he is. So against the Hawks, who have been really good defensively post All-Star break, I think like best or second best in the NBA, it makes it tough to use guys against them, especially guys who aren't high output players like Patrick Beverley. Shooting guards, Jim Harden at 10,300, 50 points for Jim. It feels like it should be what happens. He had 53 today. Even if you get 47 or 48, you're pretty happy with that sort of return from Harden. Kyle Korver at 3,700. He's tournaments only. This is a nice matchup for him, and he could get hot, so I do like him as a tournament play. And if Kent Bazemore is out, Tim Hardaway at 3,900 is a great tournament option. He dropped 37 in the last game with Bazemore out. I would say he's probably unlikely to do that, but when you play the Rockets, the likelihood goes up. So he is in play in that sort of situation as well. Small forwards, Trev Ariza. 6,000 for him, it's too high. Bazemore at 4,700, if he happens to play, which it looks like he is, he's probable, I would be okay with using him against the Rockets. He's a Rockets bump guy. He could put up a pretty decent performance. It'd be a tournament option, but he'd be someone to look at. Mike Beasley at 4,100. I feel real confident about Beasley at the moment. He's averaging 28 across the last three. He's only at 4,100, so he basically just needs to get 20 points to be 5x value, and that shouldn't be that difficult for him, I wouldn't have thought. Corey Brewer is not usable, and Thabo Sefolosha, despite averaging 21 points over the last three, I don't feel that confident about him doing it on a consistent basis. Power forwards, love Paul Millsap, 8,100, perfect situation for him. This should be a 45er for him. You would hope he can get to that level. He's already averaging 41 across his last three. Love him in this spot. The rest of the power forwards, Donatas Motiejunas was massive today, 34 points at minimum salary, but you know, he'll likely play 6 minutes in the next game. So you can't trust him. You can tournament him maybe, but I probably wouldn't. Clint Capella, Chris Humphries, Montrezl Harrell, not worth it. And Josh Smith and Terrence Jones, they don't play anymore, so we don't need to worry about them. At center, Al Horford at 7,100. I think Horford here has been underwhelming lately, but this is a good opportunity for him. I don't hate using him. Dwight at 7,500, not producing anywhere near that sort of value, so we'll leave him alone. The Clippers and the Memphis Grizzlies. Jeez, I hate looking at the Grizzlies. There's just too many injuries. Now, I had a couple of questions come in asking me about Matt Barnes' suspension. Will he be suspended? If I had to guess, and you're asking me to guess, I would say no. I don't believe that he'll be suspended. People asking me when the suspension will happen, when it will get handed down. Well, we don't know. The NBA doesn't have a time frame as to when suspensions have to occur. It might not happen. Look, we saw the Rajon Rondo one where he had that incident, I think it was down in Mexico, where he uttered that slur towards the referee. That suspension didn't come until after he'd played a couple of games, I believe. It definitely took three or four days for that suspension to come through. So I would be relatively confident that we see Matt Barnes play in this game. That said, anything's possible. Point guards, Chris Paul, 9,900. The Clippers should pummel the Grizzlies, so that does reduce the opportunity for Paul to play big minutes, and that worries me from a fantasy point of view. You're going to get 40 points out of Chris Paul, but you're going to get 50. I would much rather use John Wall at a similar salary. The point guards for Memphis, Bronte Weber, Ray McCallum, Xavier Munford, they'll all be back in a bench role with Lance Stevenson now assuming the starting job, so they're not their DFS value is plummeted. Shooting guards, JJ Redick is at 4,800, a good opportunity for him here, a nice matchup. You can get 25 out of him pretty comfortably, so I think he's a pretty nice cash and tournament option. Lance Stevenson is now at 7,200. He's got to face off against Chris Paul. It is his former team, so there is revenge game factor definitely here for Lance, but that could mean he goes off the rails. It also means he goes through the roof. He is a great tournament option here. I'm not sure at 7,200 that I want to put that into a cash game. But there are a lot of things, a lot of factors in place here. Jamal Crawford at 4,700. Yeah, I think Crawford's okay, but I don't love him. And Tony Allen I also don't love. Small forwards, Matt Barnes is the name here. If he happens to play, I think that at 6,400, again, he is against his former team as well. You should be able to get 30 points out of Barnes. But it is a risk because he does have some stinkers. So he's a tournament option. Jeff Green, no. Vince Carter, he might play, but I won't be using him. Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, and Wes Johnson. There's no other interest in any of those guys. Power forwards, Zach Randolph might be back. He's considered a game time decision. He's at 6,500. We wouldn't be using him, but it also means if he plays, we won't be using Jermichael Green and we won't be using Jarrell Martin. If Randolph plays, do you even consider Green? In a tough matchup, he's averaging 24 across his last three. He's priced at 6,000. That does not appeal to me, even if Randolph is out. At center, DeAndre Jordan, he's going to be facing Ryan Hollins. That's pretty appealing. He's at 8,400. I think he will play a few less minutes, but can he get to 40 points? I'm not confident in Jordan doing that. He's only averaging 35 across the last three, which is not high. It's not terrible, but it's not all that high. Utah and Chicago. There is no spread for this one, and at least I know why there's no spread for this one, because Gordon Hayward is questionable. We do not know if Gordo will play. Let's look at the point guards. Shelvin Mack's salary has risen significantly. He is now at 6,200, but he is averaging 36 points across his last three. If Hayward is out, he is a really good play against Derrick Rose and a Bulls defense, which is terrible for point guards. So 6,200 is it's a massive rise for Mack, but I don't think you should completely steer away from him. Derrick Rose at 6,800, he hasn't got to 30 minutes in his last two games since returning. At 6,800, he needs to go for 30-plus points, and it's not going to happen against the Jazz defense. Aaron Brooks, Hal Netto, and Trey Burke are not interesting. Shooting guards. Rod Hood was bad in the last game. He's at 5,500. This is an opportunity for him, so I do like him in a tournament, but that's really about it. And Jim Butler at 8,500. Not at that salary. Not at this matchup. Not when he's playing limited minutes. Justin Holiday, he's going to get some extra run Holiday, I'd say, with Etuan Moore already ruled out with that hamstring problem. But at 3,600, it's not a big salary, but I don't want to use him. And Chris Johnson might get some extra minutes with Gordy out, but that doesn't mean we want to use him. But the guy we do want to consider is Joe Ingles, who's at 3,800. He had 33 in the last game. It is a great matchup for Ingles. So if Hayward is out, Ingles is fine at 3,800. I think he's a great guy to plug and play. Gordo Hayward at 7,000. If he plays, I'd love using him in this spot as well. Nikola Mirotic at 4,700. He's only a tournament option, and probably even not that against the Jazz defense, who is really very, very good. And Dougie McDermott at 41 has been awesome. He's averaging 30 points across the last three, but this is a real situation against the Jazz, who are great at defending guys. And if his shot doesn't fall, then his value goes nowhere. So to me, he is a fade. Power forwards. Derek Favors, he gets the Bulls bump. It is real. He is at 7,400. This should be close to 35 points for Favors, so he is definitely in play. Taj Gibson at 51. I don't want to use him against... He played last game, and the medical staff is terrible with the Bulls. Now, Taj had some sort of quote saying that, you know, we've got to make the playoffs. I've got to play through pain to get there. Everyone does it, and that's fine. That's admirable, Taj. But playing through pain of a hamstring is different, because it's not an injury that you can't worsen. If your hamstring's strained, Taj, and you're playing, and you tear it, forget about the rest of the season. You're out for a very long time. It's a real issue. It's not about, I've just got to manage the pain and play through it. It's like, this could get worse, and this could get serious. And the Bulls medical staff should be telling him that. They should be saying to him, yeah, you choose. It's up to you. Like, you've got a hamstring issue. Sit two games. Rest a week. Like, he's not that good that he has to go out there and play. He's solid. But this could, you know, really impact their depth for the rest of the season. Weird. Bob Portis is at 4,400. He scored 31 FanDuel points in the last game, and that's interesting. But I don't have any trust against him or with him against the Jazz. None whatsoever. Speaking of Jazz big men, Rudy Gobert put up a pretty good performance in the last game, 3,200. Bulls bump for him here. This should be another 30-point performance, so he is in play. And the only other center on the roster for the Bulls who's active is Cristiano Felizio, who put up 29 in the last game, and that feels extraordinarily fluky. The last game of the night, the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. Now, there could be rests coming from everywhere in this game. There could also be none. So it's really hard to judge exactly what's going to happen here. Patty Mills at 4,200 is appealing. In a tournament setting against a high-paced Warriors team, he might get some extra burn here. He might also play 10 minutes. There's a chance that Popovich, you know, really alters things. So he's not a super confident play, but he's an okay tournament guy. Tone Parker was big in the last game, and do not expect him to drop 45 again. He's at 5,100. You probably won't use much of him. Steph at 10,300. He had 60 today, which is great. Do you go back to the well with Steph at 10,300 here? I don't feel confident in doing it, but he's a tournament option. I just don't feel confident with it, though. Klay Thompson, you're going to have Danny Green on him. He's going to have Kawhi Leonard on him. He's at 6,800. He was great today, but that's not a perfect matchup by any stretch. Danny Green at 41. He's a tournament option, and that is it. And Manu, Leandro Barbosa, Brandon Rush, Kevin Martin, Ian Clark, none of those guys really have much upside, I don't think. Kawhi, another one of these high-priced small forwards who's in an interesting matchup. Do the Warriors blow them out and Pop sits him like what happened last time? Does he sit this game? I don't think he sits at all, Kawhi, to be honest. But there's a bit going against him. He's at 8,700. His numbers recently, 37 across his last five. That's not all that high. I don't think he's a guy I want to use here. Harry Barnes at 4,100. He had an explosion today, but now he faces Kawhi Leonard. No thanks. At 4,100, he just needs to get to 20 points, but I don't even feel confident in him doing that. That's how much confidence I have in Harry. Power forwards, Draymond Green at 8,300. He's a nice 35-36-point guy. That's great, but it's not enough at 8,300. Throw him into a tournament, but that's about it. Maurice Spates is a guy I like. At 4,000 with Bogut likely out, you can get 25 points out of Spates. You can get 30 points out of Spates. He is definitely a great tournament upside guy. And even in a cash game, I feel pretty confident he can get 20 if Bogut is out, as it appears to be the case. LaMarcus Aldridge at 7,800. He's a nice 40-point average across his last five. He is one of the guys in this game that I feel most confident about using. At center, we're going to see Tim Duncan play. He didn't play in the last game against the Warriors. Not sure that means we need to use him in fantasy, but at 4,900, it is not a terrible thing. He could get 25 points, but I don't have a massive amount of trust in it. Let's now look at the DFS picks of the day. Point guard, DJ Augustin, 4,600. Shelvin Mack, 62. And John Wall, 99. At shooting guard, JJ Redick, 48. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 53. And Jim Harden, 10,300. Small forwards, Mick Beasley, 4,100, Marcus Morris, 52, and Carmelo Anthony, 88. At power forward, Maurice Spates at 4,000, Marv Williams at 61, and Paulie Millsap at 81. And the centers, Jordy Hill, 4,000, Rudy Gobert, 6,200, and Andre Drummond, 7,900. That is it for today's podcast, guys. Make sure you're following me and Basketball Monster at Twitter at redrock_bball and at baskmonster. And checking out all the stuff over on Basketball Monster and everything happening on hardwoodparoxysm.com as well. Leave a review for this show on iTunes if you think that it exists. That would be great. If you think that it's helped you out this season or you've enjoyed it, leave a review. It takes 2 minutes and it does help the show grow significantly. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.